Now, it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. He is sitting right here behind me. As far as I know, he's the mystery man, because he wouldn't tell me his name. He said, it's part of my story, and I don't want to give it away right now, so you guys are just going to have to be in suspense like I am. I do know that he's got a sobriety date of 2/15/09, which means he just celebrated 6 years 3 days ago. And I know that he traveled all the way from Fresno, brought his wife with him, and some of his friends. So I want to introduce the mystery man. Here he comes.
I came down from Fresno. I hope this guy is good.
Oh, I know.
I'm Bob the Alcoholic. That's not very good. Try it again. I'm Robert the Alcoholic. A little better. You'd think with just the name thing, I'm rehashing this from, I was a warm-up speaker up in Springville, and I did this same bit. Sorry, guys. How I came up with, down in the Visalia groups, I'm known as Bob. You know, pretty simple name. Spell it either way, it's the same. You know, nothing special. You think you just tell your name, like, okay. And up in Fresno, with my buddies from up there, I spent a long time with Joe over here, and I introduced myself as Robert. And then again, my friend Reyes, he caught on to that. Like, what are you, because he goes both the meetings of Fresno and Visalia, like, what are you doing? Like, trying to be a secret agent here or what? I said, okay, it's not a big thing, but I worked in Fresno, and when I met my beautiful wife, actually, and that's part of my story, wife number four. That's not normal to have four wives in a lifetime. I mean, if you're famous or rich or something, I'm neither one. So, but when I met her, I was working in an official capacity. I said, you give your given name. I introduced myself as Robert, so-and-so. And so her friends and family, she introduced me as Robert up there, and I started going to meetings up there in Fresno, and I'm Robert, and then I kind of had this identity crisis, which, being an alcoholic, I don't know if any of you can relate to that, maybe? Yeah. So, kind of a humorous way just to say what your name is, and kind of a mix of ways that I got here. And I've tried to use a little bit of humor to kind of deflect some of the stuff of life besides the booze later. It was just, whatever was funny, maybe hit me at the time. And my part of the deal is this is a scared straight from booze program. Now look at this face. You're like, okay, because I'm only 29 freaking years old. Look what this booze has done to me. You stop drinking. Okay. Now my sobriety date is February 15th, and my belly button day, 57, was 2 days later. And now, with the program, I'm able to spend it up at Monterey with my wife and not fight and enjoy the day where before that really wasn't the case. You know, when I first got to the program, and I would have had a couple more years if I thought it was a, go to a bunch of meetings program. That's what I thought it was. I didn't realize that the 12-step program meant do 12 steps in order, and try to get the program that way. So I didn't. And I'll get back to that part of it later, but when I did get it, I was so excited. This big book and these 12 steps are good for any human being. I got to get the word out. So the people that are closest to me, I got my brother. We were really tight growing up, and I'm 5 years older, and he used to look up to me. and those positions switched. So I sent him the big book. Try to get some response from him, and finally, we usually make an annual trip back home, Indiana. I said, hey, and I tried to, the ninth step is where it should be anyway. It's not supposed to come like right after one, so to come in order. And so I tried to make an amends again to him, and he just let it out. He just said, you know what, you failed at work as a husband, as a father, as a brother. Everything you've done, it just turns to crap. He said, you know, you give me your program book. He said, I want nothing to do with that. And you go off, none of the family wants anything to do with you. That's why they won't return calls. That's why, you know. He said, and then you go off and make some stupid, corny joke. He said, it's not funny. He said, you're not effing funny, Bob. I didn't know what it is. You know, by then, I'm trying not to laugh. Because then he'd get really mad, and he's a lot bigger than I am, and he would crunch me. And I said, okay, all right. So I went and told Dad. And Dad said, I think you're funny, son. So the whole point is, I've used humor at times when it's good, but at times when it became sarcastic, cutting, hurtful to the people I love. And I just wouldn't stop. And I don't know if you can relate to that too, just don't know when to stop with something and push it and push it and push it till I finally slam the door, hang up the phone, punch you in the face, tell you to go to hell, whatever it is. I don't ever want to see you again. You know, here's the divorce papers, whatever. Just pushing, pushing, pushing. Slowly coming around to that. I took the liberty of a few notes. I'm trying to go smoothly. That wasn't smooth, was it? Excuse me. You know, I came to the program for good at age 49. But I didn't start drinking until I was 26, like way later than a lot of the people I know. Mostly because growing up in Indiana with most everyone else working in a factory or farm, you know, a lot of hard work, a lot of hard play. And I saw a lot of what the booze did around the fishing and camping and hunting campfires that my dad and cousins, whatever, would bring. And just all kinds of insanity. You know, everyone was armed. Everyone had booze. And I thought, you know, this isn't a good combo. You know, even back then as a kid, like, hey, you see someone just all of a sudden just like somersault through this big old fire and get up, and they'd grab someone else's hat, throw it up in the air, and someone else would shoot it. Now, that scared me straight for a while. I didn't want anything to do with the booze. You know, that and, you know, watching what alcoholism does firsthand. I've got a real good relationship with my parents now, but watching and hearing the old pop taps of the beer cans, taps of liver, God, that, I used to hate that sound. So I know that for me, being an alcoholic, it's not a drinking problem, it's a thinking problem. And my thinking was becoming warped and twisted even back then. I mean, doing weird stuff like not drinking when most people drink. The guys would go out and party at high school. You know, I went off to Purdue for a year, big keggers and whatever. I was like the nerd. I drank milk and went to the gym and worked out. And then I got into it with my father over a couple grades and said, I'll show you all, instead of staying in school and getting a four-year degree paid for, I said, I'll show him, I'll join the Marine Corps. So, you know, I showed him, it ended up being one of the better things I've ever done in my life. But that just shows you the kind of thinking that's not really rational. You know, sit down and take what he has to say because he's footing the bill. So again, the weirdness, though, all the places in the Marine Corps were going out and getting drunk, and I'm not. And it was even showing, like, hey, you know, we'd have some things after working hours. And I was almost expected, you know, to at least have a beer or two, if not get, you know, crazy drunk like a bunch of Marines will be, anybody in the military. But I didn't. I saved my teenage acting time till I was in my 20s and 30s, when I should have been a responsible adult. So, you know, I got out of Corps, went back to Indiana, and joined an organization where you have to stay even keel, good decisions all the time. You respond with lights and siren, emergency response type of job. And I got to see, again, why I didn't want to drink. Firsthand, a lot of carnage, a lot of death, a lot of, you know, mangled up bodies. Not always because of a drunk driver, but way more often than should be. Drunk drivers became my enemy. And I, you know, took whatever measures I could to put, you know, I just didn't like them. But I couldn't empathize. I just couldn't empathize with why somebody would do that and get behind a wheel, which, you know, later on I was doing the exact same thing. I ended up becoming what I hated. You know, going through the first divorce, she drank and was smoking dope all the time. I said, man, I can't live like this. I was still not. Ironically, that went away. And I took the really bright idea of starting my drinking career while I was teaching at an academy. Talking about living in a glass house. Not a good time to pick to do that. And I was okay till the very end, and I used to say, I never lost a job because of drinking, and then, well, you know what, going through the fourth step and doing a review of your life, yeah, heck I did. At the end of a party, my other thing that always was on the side was having a girlfriend. You know, even while I'm married, and I could come find out that's not good either. Who knew? You know, my past life. So, this was the wrong one that I went. All I had to do was say no, because I was her superior, and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, my off-duty time cost me that profession. Then I really dove into Jack Daniels. Mostly something as quickly, you know, and even the 151 from time to time. Well, that's hard to choke down. I mention that because that was one of Reyes' choices. But just anything to get drunk is fast. But, well, I did acquire a taste for beer, so, oh, yeah, I would, you know, 6-pack, 12-pack of beer with half pint or a pint, and, you know, until that was becoming not enough. So I lost the job, and I had to start doing all kinds of jobs just to keep the child support paid up, the IRS caught up. And at times, I had garnishments from the court for child support and IRS at the same time. So I was working two or three jobs, 60, 70, 80 hours a week. You know, you wouldn't think you'd have the time to drink, but I found time to not only drink, but buy the beer and whiskey and say, poor Bob. Or as JC and some of these guys started, they're calling me Bobby now. So, Bob, Robert, Bobby, what, you know. And whenever I do the pity party, it was, poor Bob. you know, and I would end up pulling up, watching a bunch of movies, eating a whole pizza. There was never, it was always more. More, I would eat the whole bag of chips, drink the whole bottle of whiskey, just consuming mass quantities of everything. It was just to fill that bottomless pit, that void that was missing. And just, you know, I started to, and that's why I no longer as pretty as I was. You know, my health was going at the time. I'd stopped working out. You know, the side effects of all that, what Ben Franklin said not to do, moderation and everything. Off my notes, and I have no idea what I'm even talking about. Am I doing all right? So I had my two kids, and they, you know, I thought a lot of time with them. You know, I'd do a lot of things with them, but thinking back, you know, all the time chasing skirts and drinking, that could have been time spent on those younger kids, which now are grown adults, and I have an okay relationship with them, but it could be better. They all live in, ironically, I moved here and they moved, not only moved here, they all joined the military and went to the other side of the world. So they all three went overseas, but now I can call them. They'll call me for the birthday. They all called, so it's getting better. But going back to my time wasted, which then I had started, you know, poor pity, I'm wasting my life. Another thing to beat myself up with and drink more and more about. You know, I should have done this, should have done that with the kids. Well, they moved, that'd be number one. So in between that, I got married again, divorced. Somewhere in there. A 19-month marriage that should never have happened. I got on with it after doing all, you know, these side jobs though, some of them were kind of, I wouldn't have had a chance to do some of them. Some brought me some humility at the time. I was actually 30 something then, and one of the jobs was delivering pizzas to an affluent side of Indianapolis. Delivering to some rich kids, kind of college boys. And one time I remember delivering some pizzas, and the bill came to something 93 cents. And he looked at me and says, he's, I don't know what, 20, and 30 something. He says, 7 cents coming. He said, keep the change, Pops. He slammed the door in my face like, you really? I put the 7 cents in my pocket. And I got back and looked in the rearview mirror. And some of that stuff started to hit like, okay, I put myself in this position. One of the things, my character defects, was extreme arrogance and pride. One of the reasons I didn't catch on to this program as well is because I'd look around like, God, I do not belong here. What am I doing? I do not belong with these jokers. It turns out I do. I mean, it's exactly where I need to be, but it didn't come. So jobs like that helped me a little bit with the pride and humility thing. But some of them were just like unique experiences. I was feeding these exotic animals, really like African lions and buffalo and wolves and, I mean, I realized that the uniqueness of being, everyone has either house cats or been around, so they'll turn and spray. Well, male African lions will do the same. So one of them turned around, sprayed me head to toe, and covered me with lion piss. Like, God, this sucks. And I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool, though. Who can say that? Right. You know, kind of twisted thinking, too. And and then the guy gave me, it's one of the times I've broken my knee, like, I've had like 7 accidents on this one knee, and, you know, thank God I didn't get addicted to painkillers. They just made me throw up, they really did. I tried to make them, but thank God. So I'm out there on a crutch, and it's like 0 degrees, like it is back there now, on a rock, like concrete ground. And this guy gives me an axe handle without the head of the axe, and there's like some buffalo in this pen I'm supposed to feed. Like, what if they come and just hit him on the head with the axe? Really? So I'm hobbling along, and this thing, big old beast, I don't know if you've been next to some of them, they're like, they're big as buffalo. But I hit that thing, and he just shook his little head and like took a step forward, like, man, I'm going to die trampled by buffalo. And then the last thing is where the lions were, you know, getting off the subject here. Anyway, they came out the back after I pinned them up, and if I'd opened one more latch, I would have been in the pen with these 4 African lions. Like, you know what? This is not worth. That's one job that was unique anyway that I had to do because I put myself at a financial strait. In other words, I wouldn't have been doing that. The bills were coming. The repo man took my truck once when I got on with FedEx finally. And I'm actually a manager at the time. I come out and it's gone. And the guy's talking to me, call the police? I go, I don't think so. So what? He goes, well, they may call me to make some payments, and I guess it's theirs now. So repo man, I declare bankruptcy, anything financial, that you could do stupidly, the decisions I made. So when I moved out here, I thought, hey, change of geographic. Anyone familiar with that? All right. I lived in 3 states, but when I did my inventory, about a dozen towns, 40 residences, about 40 different jobs between the 2 career jobs. That's not normal. 4 wives, that's not normal. All this change. I got out here, I thought I'm just going to just be dad and dedicate myself to the job, and before you knew it, I met W number 3, and then before you know that, she's expecting, so hey, start all over again. By then I was drinking regularly, but I was happy, she wasn't, didn't know it. That's one thing that, just one of the wives that was non-confrontational said, so I didn't know, or at least I was too drunk to know. By then I was drinking, I would say weekends. I'm only going to drink on the weekends. You know that thing they read where you make a deal with yourself, I'm only going to drink, wine, or what's natural wine anyway? I don't get that. So just on weekends. Well, what happens when there's Friday is a national holiday, or Monday? Well, it turns into a 3-day weekend. And then what happens to Thanksgiving? Well, technically the Wednesday at 6 o'clock before starts that weekend. And then, some of you, like Monday Night Football is a national holiday sometimes. So I stretch it out. And there's like, I think Tuesday from 10 to Wednesday at 2 was my week. Everything else was fair game. So I'm drinking like crazy. And one of these times, I think wife number 2, I thought it was all right. I go out of town, come home. The apartment's empty. There's like some papers and she left the cat. Like, oh, something's not right here. So when W3 left, without knowing there was a problem, it devastated me. I went straight into AA. I'm going to show her. Little did I know that was way gone. So I didn't go to AA for the right reasons. I went for someone else. And of course it didn't work. And going to a bunch of meetings without working the steps, for me it didn't work. It might work for someone. I would not recommend that. So when I met wife number four, I was going to less and less meetings, but I thought I'd been to enough that I can now drink like a gentleman, as they say. And I thought, you know, a little bit, little Dos Equis, one or two beers, and I looked, and then nothing happened. Nothing really bad happened. Or so I was thinking. More and more, you know, Dos Equis usually should have tequila. So then comes the tequila, the hard, you know, more hard stuff. Well, the last bottom, she's seen and experienced more than all the others combined. And we had a bottom together, a horrible bottom. I thought, that's over. You know, I look in the mirror, I've got the common denominator of three ex-wives and the loss of, you know, we'd already been engaged. The only thing common was me. You know, so I thought, it must be me somehow. So I came back into these rooms desperate, the gift of desperation. And I was going to go to any length to get to a solution. You know, I was raised Catholic, and after the first divorce, I cussed out God, and then after a while didn't believe in Him. Had like a minute or two of being an atheist, like, you know, there probably is a God, but He didn't care. So I went back, you know, just given some of the religion, went to a lot of the Protestant churches and all the differences. And I never got the spiritual part of going to practicing a religion. I never got to know God until these doors opened up a way to Him. And some of my ways of thought were pretty narrow, you know, pretty narrow views of this Creator, this God that has made an unending universe in time and space. And I just, I'm kind of a science buff and a nature geek, an animal nerd. And to know that He's made all these creatures, and to know He's made these, you know, all these distant galaxies, and it looks like He cares about what I do. It humbled me. Anyway, I got to know Him through these rooms, and I'll be forever grateful that these rooms were open and allowed me to get past the religious beliefs that I had. And nothing but wrong about religions. I mean, we still go to church every now and then, but I can get the spiritual meaning out of it now. But it's not like I miss Mass and, oh my God, we're going to go to hell. I don't think it works like that. Actually, I missed getting anxious today. Tommy gave me some of his. I don't know if that, I think it works. He said it's all right. I'm way off track here. There you go. Yada, blah, 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 got drunk, blah, 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 blah. Okay. You know, one of the things I did when I came back in and I started doing the steps, I was still stuck in poor me, poor me. My first sponsor cried, and I just got stuck on step four and got stuck there for, I don't know how long. But I would go to meetings and start spewing this crap out on the table. And finally, and I thought my sponsor was going to make it, Bob T. After the meeting, he said, you need to bring your book, here's my address, and you need to really do these meetings, these steps. So with his guidance and me briefly getting out of my way, I was able to get through the steps. And step four, which for me was hard to look at myself and see what I've done, what I became. I became what I hated, what I swore, what I took an oath to do, I became. I mean, to protect against, I became. So he helped me through that. And again, he saved my life. You know, I had... just my experience. I'd never experienced any suicidal thoughts, and I had when I was becoming, when I was that dry drunk. Like I had enough AA knowledge to think, I can't drink, but then, I can't go on like this. I just can't. My head was running, you know, the RPMs were going, there's no oil up there. There was no booze up there to let me escape from reality. And all my other escapes, you know, I couldn't run anymore. I had a bum knee. That was my escape. My brother said I wasn't funny, so I couldn't use humor. I was going to eat myself into an early death. So all of the escapes, you know, and I, again, you know, one woman, so I couldn't, like, go out on it. You know. So all these things that normal people realize at an earlier age, I was realizing finally, but there was no joy. There was no joy in Mudville there. Once he got me past that fourth step, and then the rest, it just seemed to flow together. And now I got my notes here. What I was like, what happened, what it's like now. Experience, strength, and hope. The thing that got me there was just this intense fear, and I didn't really know I was afraid. And trying to get around from that. I used to love solitude. I loved solitude when I was younger, before I had alcoholic thinking. I used to go hiking, fishing, hunting, you know, even the sports I did were solitary sports. But as I became alcoholic, and the other side of being alone was that terrorizing aloneness. I mean, even in a group of this many people, I was completely alone. Or, you know, so I thought. I did, you know, we have that thing of the footprints in the sand in our house, and it's like, he's always been there. And I just didn't take the time to see him, talk to him, let him into my life. But now I enjoy the solitude again. I love to go out, still love to go out in nature and just take a nice long hike. And what I'll do, well, just to start my day, I'll take some of the readings that I'll have, the daily reflections you're all familiar with, and the big book. I never leave home without it. But I've added some other daily readings to it as well. Sought through prayer and meditation. My wife practices a lot of meditation, and I, you know, back from Indiana, I think, you know, meditation, oh, that's bad. It's, you know, you're sitting on some mountain, you know, doing the Om, and that's just not right, you know. But I've got to know through some intense meditation. I'm still a novice. But I've come to really rely on that. And it gets me in a frame of mind to be able to pray a little better. And sometimes I'll just talk to God or just do the readings. But I know that what's prescribed here, for me, it works. You know, I've got most of my good friends in the world are in the program. And I love my family, and I've tried to make my amends with them. Some will have nothing to do with me. Some have accepted me completely, and there's those in the middle still seeing, like, waiting. And I'm not getting all edgy, but from my experience, when they come around, if they come around, that's fine. But I'm not going to lose any more sleep or life over worrying about that. And I, you know, and now when we, you know, I've been out of town baseball trips with some of these guys, you know, my friend JC is like probably my best friend in the world. And he's mentored me through a lot of things. He suggested when I did something else stupid with my wife, hey, just shut the world out, take your AA readings, and literally for a week, don't leave your house. You know, no junk food, no TV, no computer, no nothing. It was, if I hadn't been retired, I'd say, are you kidding me? I got to go make some money. So it was a rare opportunity for me to get in touch with God. And I'll be grateful for that forever. It really put me on a new footing. And someone else walked in with ashes. I said, oh, man, you took me a train of thought there again. I'm sorry. Where was I? I was in a new plane, right? He told me to wrap it up in a few minutes, but I guess to sum up, had some twisted thinking, drank, it got worse, did the steps, life's all better. That's it? I mean, that's pretty much it. I didn't mean to end right there, but I'm Bob Robert, Bobby Alcoholic. You're going to take questions?
Hey, we got about a couple minutes left. If anybody wants to ask any questions, Bob Robert Bobby would be happy to answer them for you. Anybody got any questions out there?
Jeep.
I got a question. What's the most important thing you do on a daily basis to stay sober?
You know, I did kind of touch on that. But to me, sitting and doing nothing was exactly that. It was always getting something done, you know, the next goal. If you're not moving, you're wasting life. You're wasting part of your life. So I never took that time to stop and just be still. Just to stop and be still while you're awake and not passed out. I mean, plenty of times, you know, you got puke on you, you know, that, not counting that. So I take that time to just first be still. And then I'll do my readings in no particular order. And that's it, really. I at times I'll go outside and I'll, you know, we have some bird feeders, and that it's just, I love to watch them, you know, watch any of the animals. And I've been lucky enough to travel the country a lot and see some of the big national parks and all that, but it's just as amazing to sit, put some bird feeders up and watch these beautiful creatures and say your prayers and listen to what he has to say, you know, just to be able to hear the wind and when the geese will fly over our house a couple times a day. It's a big thing. But the small things I'm able to enjoy, and the small things, that's what life is all about, really. You know, we all have to go to watch one of our loved ones die. We have to go to funerals. We have to go to hospitals. You know, we have to, some of us have to go through divorce or two or three. You know, these big things come. You know, you got to take, but it's the small things. And in taking that, I say a few minutes, because sometimes life still goes on, and we, you know, our book is full, we got to hit the ground running, and we have 5 or 10 minutes. We both take, she goes to another part of the house, and I stay in our area. Sometimes we'll come together and do it. But it's taking those few minutes, Philip, thanks, that means all the difference. And then staying with a home group. Again, I don't know if it's Rule 62 or if it's our Friday meeting or our Monday meeting. I just feel at home with all these groups and all these great folks. You know, one thing. If you ever get a chance to start a meeting, do it. This has been such a blessing in my life. I found that I just go to men's meetings because of, you know, my past, you know, a little bit about my past now. But also, if you notice, if there's not a lot of primping and, you know, all this garbage, step 13 that goes on in a lot of these meetings, it just wasn't for me. So I was telling her, I said, there's not enough meetings in Visalia. I should start one. I can't start a meeting. You know, I put limitations on myself. And come to find out, you can. There's like three quarters of the guys that went regularly to that first Friday meeting. I would call and text and go to these other meetings and try to get, hey, come on, let's meet. And there for a couple months, it was 3, 4, 5 of us every Friday morning. Friday morning at 6:30 in the morning, 210, Cafe 210 is still going. Now it's become, there's what, 25, 26, 30, there's been over 30 regular attendees that calls that its home group. And then again, being an alcoholic, I was the secretary, you know, treasurer, chip guy, you know, and finally she said, you know, why don't you let some other people serve? Oh! So I divvied that out, and I said, like, but it's mine. And no, it's not yours. And now I come down as a visitor, and I see it going, and I just... It's such a blessing. The fellowship, just that one meeting, has grown too. You know, and then I'm coming down like to the two meetings. It's like a 100-mile round trip. And again, I couldn't. It's a blessing. I could, wouldn't have been able to do this if I was feeding buffalo. I went over. I'm babbling again. I'd do that. Oh, Zeke has a question.
Same question to Mark. And what occurrences happened when you realized you gave up your fears and your resentments to God?
Freedom. Zeke knows a little bit about me. A sponsee. I've got to see this man grow, and it's been my great pleasure to watch you grow, Zeke. He's secretary in the Monday men's group, which they don't put up with BS. You know, the guys either got your stuff together or, you know, we'll find someone else. Yeah, hit the bricks. But Zeke, just freedom to be me, and I didn't even know who I was. I see a lot of what Grass calls AA dodo heads. Everyone knows Grass. He's like, I didn't know who I was. I was morphing, of course, changing jobs. Hey, that's pretty cool. I'll keep that part of my repertoire. I'll do this. The booze changed me so much, I did not know who I was. Even though, I'm still up here with three different names. I'm me. Now I can look in the mirror and not want to retch. Because I looked in that mirror and it made me want to puke. I hate, of all the hates and resentments, that guy in the mirror is the one I hated the most. And now I look like, hey, good morning! And he waves back, and smiles back. And now I can go with a goofy smile and wave at people, and if they don't wave back, that's okay. But you know, I might spark someone else into that. It's like that, what do they call that? An indiscriminate act of kindness? Random. It's nice. It's nice to do that without any thought of getting anything back in, you know. Okay, I'm going to do this, but what's in it for me? Can I ask you a question? That's how our talks go anyway, Zeke. Okay. Okay.